All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the 45th episode of Matinee Talk. I am one of your hosts, Johnny Lightfoot. With me, as always,
Julian Owens.
What's up, Julian? How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
The weather is messing with everybody.
And I've been having a headache for the last couple of days, so it doesn't feel well at all. But I'm going to power on through to get this episode done. But yeah, I'm not 100% right now.
Yeah, so. I'm all hopped up on the Allegra.
Allegra and ibuprofen.
Yep. So today, our main topic, we're going to be talking about the new film, The Invisible Man. But before we get to that, what do we got at the box office?
So, for this past weekend in the box office, we had some pretty insight on some pretty good movies this week. So, for number one, we got The Invisible Man bringing in $28.2 million for its opening weekend. That's a really good number.
It cost $7 million.
That's it? Oh, yep. See, it got its money back. We'll talk about that in
I think just worldwide it's at like $50 million.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, we're definitely talking about that later in the episode. Number two comes in with Sonic the Hedgehog with 16.2, bringing his domestic total up to $128.5 million. Sonic is really becoming a hit now. Okay. Mm-hmm. Number three is The Call of the Wild, bringing in $13.3 million, bringing his domestic total to $46 million. Number four is My Hero Academia Heroes Rising, which I also saw this weekend, with 5.8 with its opening weekend, being one of the best anime openings for any U.S. release in the last decade or so. Wow. So, pretty good. Pretty good. And rounding out, number five, Bad Boys for Life with $4.3 million, bringing its domestic total to $197.4 million.
So, any standouts other than The Invisible Man and Sonic?
Like I said, I'm surprised that My Hero Academia made that much money. So, the hindsight, I went to go see it, and it was really good. I enjoyed it. If you're an anime fan, if you love My Hero Academia, definitely recommend it. There was not that many people in the theater when I watched it, so I was kind of confused. But, wow, that's really nice. That's one of the standouts. And, of course, Call of the Wild, just because...
Oh, man, it is bombing.
I mean, it is, but it's surprising that it's actually making that much money. So that's why I'm like, huh, okay, all right. But yeah, other than that, no, that's much. Oh, wait. No, never mind. I was going to say Impractical Jokers has been out for 11 weeks, so never mind. Can't talk about them.
All righty then. So movie releases coming out soon. I know this week we have mostly a bunch of Pixar stuff.
Yeah, a lot of Pixar stuff.
Coming out in 4K. Mark Ruffalo's Dark Waters, which I saw. It's a little depressing, but it's good.
I heard it's very sad.
And then Queen and Slim, which we both saw. And I thought that was actually really good as well.
But I don't know if it would be a rewatch for me.
No, I wouldn't. I don't think I would buy it.
Yeah, I don't think I would buy it. Rent it again just for people who haven't seen it. But for a buy, I don't know if I'd buy it.
Yeah. Next week, we've got Uncut Gems, which is definitely a buy for me.
Definitely a buy.
Got Beauty and the Beast coming out in 4K. And then Bombshell is the only, I guess. Oh, and Spies in Disguise, which I didn't see. Charlie's Angels, which is actually really fun.
I was just going to ask you, because it was fun for you, what you said in a couple of episodes back, would you buy it on DVD?
I will buy it when it inevitably goes on sale. Like, I'm thinking, like, Black Friday for, like, $10 or $15.
Okay, that's
fair. But I'm not paying full price, because full price 4K is, like, $30. So, yeah, no.
Okay, fair. But definitely, Uncut Gems will be definitely a buy when it comes out next week. Okay, with that being in mind, we're going to go straight into some other movie news. So, basically, John Wick's director and Quiet Place producers are making a Paramount car movie. So, to give you a little bit of idea, Chad Stahelski and some producers, I think Andrew Forum and Brad Fuller, yes, got those both, right, are doing a new action movie. It's just a car-centered action pick. There's no actors involved yet. Just saying that there's a director and two producers involved. They also have done Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies with Michael Bay. So, they kind of have some traction on making money. And Chad has made arguably one of the best kung fu movies that we've seen in the last 10 years. So that kind of pairing, you would hope, would be a good movie, but we can only hope. There's no release date on it. All we know is that that's basically, that's happening. And
yeah, I mean, people like stupid car action movies, and absolutely, they make a lot of money, and I will be there to watch it. So
the only thing is, when's the last car action movie we had besides Baby Driver from 2 years ago?
Other than Fast and Furious movies?
Oh, you're right. My bad. I completely forgot. You're right.
Yeah, just some more fun action. And Paramount, other than their Mission Impossible movies, they don't really have a franchise.
No, they don't.
Okay, our next piece of movie news is, so J.J. Abrams' production studio Bad Robot is going to produce a supernatural western called The Pinkerton for Warner Brothers. It was a little while ago that Warner Brothers kind of outbid everybody and basically got the rights for Bad Robot produced movies. And the report is that it's going to be a script from writer Daniel Casey, who did 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I liked. And apparently they're going to be having Overlord director Julius Avery to direct the project, which I'm excited about because I really dug Overlord.
He didn't do Cloverfield Paradox. Never mind. Thinking of another director.
But yeah, and this sounds like total Fantastic Fest movie.
You think it'll be a Fantastic Fest movie coming up?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay. All right. Oh, we forgot something else on the docket. I want to know your opinion. So last week, because we weren't recording, we kind of missed it. But Bob Iger
stepping down
as Disney CEO.
I wasn't surprised because he had already said he's stepping down and that he was planning on leaving in 2021.
Why a year early? I was confused.
Well, no, he's still staying on until 2021.
Okay.
As advisor to the CEO. And a lot of people are actually not too stoked about the guy taking over. I can't think of his name.
I forgot his name.
But he was like the director for like all of the parks and everything. And he was the one who actually scaled back a lot of the immersive stuff, like having all of the characters running around all the time. He kind of cut back on a lot of that.
Is he
especially also in the Galaxy's Edge? He like cut back on a lot of like not having as many stormtroopers and all of that stuff.
So to your point, is he also the one that reeled out that policy that you can't have your lightsaber out in Galaxy's
Edge? Oh, that I don't know.
Because I know there was a big controversy about 3 or 4 months ago. So I don't know if he's the one who brought that up too. But to your point, he brought back a lot of immersion, whereas Bob Iger kind of gave you more of an immersive, more interactive
experience. Yeah, which is what Walt Disney wanted.
Right. And so
if you watch that show on Disney Plus, The Imagineers.
Yes. Yeah. So to our point, that's why I'm kind of hesitant if that's who we're going to get as a CEO for Disney. Because it's going to be like, all right, Bob Iger pushed imagination, engineering, and interactivity with all of this and bought so much IP to Disney, and you've been pushing back on immersion for all the parks. Are you going to do the same thing with the property and IP with the films and stuff like that? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I hope that won't be the case.
I mean, like I was saying, Bob Iger staying on as an advisor to him through until 2021, so hopefully he can keep his ideas going with this new guy.
We can only hope. We can only hope we get like a Tim Cook for Disney, like how Tim Cook did for Steve Jobs after he passed away. Mm-hmm. We can only hope that when Bob Iger leaves and completely removes himself from Disney, this new CEO will do the exact same. One could only hope.
Yeah. No, definitely.
And the last thing, real quick, just because I was a huge fan of the original film, and I was excited to see what Jordan Peele did with it, the new trailer for Candyman has just been released, and I can't wait. I cannot wait for June.
Yeah, I'm really excited. It looks good. It looks different, while still bringing back some of the old elements, which is nice because you can't, if you're gonna do reimagining, which this feels more like a not a reimagining, but a reboot that's still tied to the original one,
right?
Which is cool. So I'm really excited to see where it goes.
My only fear with it, though, is I feel like it's going to do the exact same plot as the original one. Besides, I keep forgetting her name, becoming or having some kind of ties to Candyman's backstory. Mm-hmm. I think the photographer in this go-round is going to be now, hey, I want you to be the new Candyman as I'm passing the torch or something like that.
Right.
In a sense. So I hope it's not what I think it is, but from what I see, the kills look absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. And the festival effects. And thank you, Jordan Peele, for ruining another song that I liked.
Yeah.
And making it creepy.
Well, he's just producing, right?
Yeah, he is producing. Yeah. But Nia DaCosta is the director. Mm-hmm. I forgot what she has done, but another movie that he's produced that he has ruined music. I don't know who his music producer is. But how you're mixing these movies, thank you for ruining another song. I appreciate you.
All right. I think that's it with the news, yes?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, we're going to get into our main topic, which is The Invisible Man. But before that, we have a small little ad real quick, and then we'll be right back with The Invisible Man.
So stay tuned.
And we're back. All right, Julian, so right off the top, how'd you feel about The Invisible Man?
If you would have started the Dark Universe with this film, I would have been set. I would have been happy. I would have been absolutely ecstatic for what we had coming up, but you didn't. Mm-hmm. So, Wendell, I will put it this way. You have made probably one of the best iterations of The Invisible Man. I enjoyed this movie. It was really good. Changing the perspective was one of the best things that this movie could have done. I loved it. I enjoyed it. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it. Right now, it's at the top of my list for 2020.
Yep.
I believe I'm at 24 or 25 now, but yeah, it's at the top of the list. I thought it did a really good job of that, just psychological thriller. Mm-hmm. You had a little bit of action in there, not so much horror, which I think if you're expecting a horror movie, like, that's not what this is. It's definitely a psychological thriller with some science fiction elements. And, it messes with your head a little bit while you're watching it. And I thought it was phenomenal. It amazed me when I found out it was made for only $7 million.
That's why when you told me that, I was completely baffled. $7 million. And the way that he did it, this film, was completely different from how he did Upgrade, because I watched the advanced screening of Upgrade when he came to Austin and talked about how he did the effects and all that, and how he wanted to be like a indie independent film, and how he wanted his next project, i.e. this film, to be that big blockbuster like James Wan did. But he again dialed it back, and it looks really damn good. To your point, I wasn't upset at the fact that this movie wasn't as scary or as jumpy as I would want to hope. However, what I really did enjoy is The Nun, The Conjuring Universe. Please, if you're listening to this podcast, please listen to this part. The way that he gave you the jump scares was earned. You get the tension building, and that's what you have to start with. You build the tension up, like one scene that we won't talk about until spoiler part, where you're building tension, you release it, and then you build it up some more, then give me the jump scare. All right, I wasn't expecting any of that, right? That's how you build tension, and that's how you gave jump scares in this film. And the entire time, I was tense,
mm-hmm.
especially since the very first 5 to 10 minutes of the film. I'm tense because I'm sitting there wondering what's going to happen. Why are we in this situation? And from that point on, you're on the edge, like, what is happening next? Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I thought Elizabeth Moss gave a fantastic performance. Excuse me. But yeah, I mean, you really felt like she was a battered woman that was extremely fearful for her life and just terrified. And you get also this feeling of, does she think she's going crazy?
Yeah.
And she plays that very, very well. The victim, but then also, you know, kind of, it, you know, introspect, you know, looking into herself, wondering, like, or is it just
me? I'm going crazy. Yeah. Yeah. And to your point, we're going to talk about this in the spoiler part. I want to know your opinion about the ending and how that transpires, but we're not going to get into that just yet.
The score as well was phenomenal. I was actually debating getting the Mondo vinyl.
There's a Mondo vinyl already?
Which is a clear vinyl that looks like a fogged handprint on it.
Okay. How much is it? Like 35?
Yeah.
Most. Okay. That score was really that good. I might even actually buy that as my other vinyls. To your point, I love the way that he built tension with certain dials and stuff like that. Elizabeth Moss was fantastic. I keep forgetting the black actor's name who was in it also. He's only been in so many other projects. He was also good. The guy that plays her abusive boyfriend, how did you feel about him, per se?
I mean, I guess he was okay, but he was playing it a certain kind of way, and I got the way he was trying to play it.
What do you mean?
Like, you know, this uber-aggressive male, like, alpha,
okay,
just super douche.
Okay, you're right. So, I forgot his name. Oliver
Jackson. Michael Dorman. No.
That's Tom.
No, that's the brother. Brother. Yeah.
I know he was Tom. Yeah, Oliver Jackson Cohen is Adrian. And Aldrich Hodge, that's his name. Because he was in Hidden Figures and what was the other movie? Straight Outta Compton, because I remember now. Yeah, Aldrich Hodge. He played a great Michael in getting you in the, not Michael, James, that's his name, to get you in the idea of like, hey, I want to help you, but at the same time, I don't know if I can believe you and mm-hmm. what's going on, right? We're not going to explain his big role just yet, but that's just part of it. And it really just seems like a one play, you're just watching her perspective of where is everything going, and I enjoy that. And how it affects all the other people around her, that's why I was really
yeah, you get to see the character dynamics between all of the different people change throughout from the very beginning yeah. to the end. And none of the characters are in the same place at the end as they were in the beginning. And you get to see those relationships change, the people's feeling towards one another, not just their feeling, their actions towards one another change.
Yeah.
Which moves the story along nicely.
Right. And so that's why I really enjoyed it, because you really get the character development. And again, James and Elizabeth Moss' character, you're seeing them change in a way. By the end of the film, you're like, wow, okay, cool. Speaking of which, I can't talk about it in the spoilers because I don't want people anticipating this, but there's a almost like a twist that happens. And it reminded me of like an old Alfred Hitchcock film. And we'll talk yeah. about that later. And I was just really, this movie is really smart, despite what I once thought about this movie, because I thought it was just going to be some dumb thriller, Elizabeth Moss running around, just seeing CGI and things happening. But it was a very smart, intellectual thriller. Not in the sense of you have to be highbrow to watch it, but you
took a very real issue
yeah.
that a lot of people have to deal with all over the world, and you turn that into a psychological thriller where you realize that there are people in those type of relationships and situations, and then to make it even scarier than just already those type of people are scary and they're unhinged and they're possessive and abusive, and then you take that and you give them even more power to yeah. To an egomaniac narcissist, and you give them that even more power, and then they treat people like toys.
And seeing how Adrian is playing everybody as a chess piece, even when he's not there, is absolutely phenomenal, which is what, again, goes with acting and believability, like you said, because I know, unfortunately, there was a few people that I knew that was being in this situation, and you're sitting there and you're trying to help, but you know that the person is maniacally, maniacally and maliciously putting different pieces of the puzzle to, isolate them in a sense, and seeing how Adrian, smart and with his narcissistic ways, be able to put what people in their ways, whether it's financially, emotionally, or mentally, it was really, really, really thought-provoking, and it was a really reflection on, you know, relationships and helping people who are in abusive relationships and things like that. Now, I have to ask, because again, I was surprised by the $7 million budget. Do you honestly feel like it was a $7 million budget film? By the CGI, the effects and things like that?
No, I mean, all of the Invisible Man special effects looked fantastic. And I was probably expecting like a $15 to $20 million budget.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just goes to show like their monster universe or whatever, their dark universe, they should have kept it low and given it to directors who love this material and actors willing to play in this type of material. And yeah, I mean, I would have loved to see what they could have done with, you know, give all of the directors like $20 million or less and like just make a cool movie and not try to go for blockbuster.
So to your point, I want to hold off to that, to a conversation I wanted to have with the ending of the movie with, like I said, with the twist, and put that in the spoiler part. So I love what you said, because I was thinking about this on the way home after I watched it the second time on my mom's birthday weekend, this past weekend, and I was thinking about this the entire time. Like, if Universal would have done blah, 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 this would have made the perfect dark universe, and you could have actually been where you wanted to be. Now, the only other thing that I was kind of like, it's weird that he put it in here, but I enjoyed it, was the one-nail shots, I call them now, where the action is like hinged on, I guess, the actor is what I want to use it for. So like how Upgrade. How he was in Upgrade with the, I keep forgetting the main character's name, where he was literally going around and you see the camera move with him as he's moving off axis, beating people up. How did you feel about that in terms of what we were watching with the Invisible Man? In one particular scene, we won't talk about it now.
I thought it was okay. I will say I probably would have preferred that to stay in like an action movie.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I mean, it looked cool in the scene that it was in, but I don't know. I guess it didn't bother me or get me excited, so
it was just like, okay, all right, yeah, this is cool, but didn't need to be here, but okay, whatever. Okay, all right. Now, is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we jump into spoilers? Because I feel like there's a lot.
Yeah, that we can digest I guess not. We can move forward.
Okay. All right. Now we're in the spoiler part of the episode. If you have not seen Invisible Man, please pause the podcast. Come back to us. We'll give you a 3-second head start. So without further ado, guys, we're going in. I guess what I was kind of frustrated with, which I was pretty interested in, and we're going to talk about, do you want to talk about the ending right now, and then we'll jump into one part? So, like I said, the Alfred Hitchcock twist that you got, you know, he got Tom in the suit. How did he get Tom in the suit and go attack Sydney and James? I don't know. I want to understand how that happened. But in the same notion, she goes to the house, right? Goes to talk to Adrian after he faked his own death and basically has been in his apartment or in his closet clocked up for so long, right? How did all that happen and Adrian was still the culprit of everything? But at the same time, do we honestly know if she actually was right in saying that it was Adrian and not Tom? That's my only takeaway from this, is like, was it all in her head? Was Tom the one really trying to get all the money for all of this? Or was Adrian really
that crazy? It was definitely Adrian. It was definitely Adrian. And I think by the end, it could have been both of them. Or it was just Adrian got him to do it. Because, yeah, that's like a big thing with this movie, is him saying surprise,
right?
And then I think that's what she was going to dinner to do. What I don't think she was going there with the intent of killing him.
Yeah.
She was going there to find out if it was definitely him. And it wasn't until he said surprise that she was like, nope, it was definitely it was him.
So to your point, though, I guess this is movie magic, I guess, that I'm just not letting go. Why in the hell? I'm just saying me, right? If I know that I'm supposed to make her scared and all this other stuff and harass her and stalk her too, why in the hell would I board up my own brother in this situation and make the police find him and make all of this stuff go to me instead of, you know, have Cecilia be the one to, like, you know, kill me and all that? Like, I don't know. I wouldn't put my, I guess for me, it's like, you put yourself, he put himself in a life or death situation, hoping that everything goes well. After, even after he told Cecilia everything that he needed to know, it's like, why do that? I don't know. I guess
narcissist.
You're right, and I guess I need to let it go.
Egomaniac.
You're right.
So with the premise of this again being the abusive relationship and all of that stuff, and then you go into the faked suicide, and then just the way he manipulates everybody, including his brother.
Yeah.
And, you know, does these things to where she, to everybody else, her closest friends and her sister, basically thinks she's going crazy, she's paranoid, is very disturbing that, you know, somebody has that much power and control over another person that their own family and friends now thinks they're crazy because of that.
Right. And it was just really crazy. So to one of your points, right? I don't know. For me, I guess Adrian knows how Cecilia writes to her sister or anything like that. Like how he literally made a whole forged email with saying, I don't want you in my life. I hate you. I wish you would have died instead of him. And all this other stuff. I didn't need your like money and stuff like that. And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
That's really, really deep. Like, I didn't expect the movie to go that far in to talk about how much he is a narcissist and pushing everybody and isolating her from there. And what I really was surprised by with this film, again, spoilers, was when Tom was at the psychiatric hospital with Cecilia and told her, I'm sorry, Cecilia, you're basically a murderer for killing your sister, which we'll talk about in a moment. If you sign this, then I'm going to be your lawyer and we'll figure this out. Or you can do like my brother wants you to do. Just call him. We can make it all go away and pretend like nothing ever happened. I'm like, did you literally just put both of them in a piece together and just hope for a checkmate to happen? That's ridiculous. And I was like, well, actually, I know people who will be this narcissistic and this crazy to do something. Yeah, like,
and
that.
I mean, you think about it too, is whether it's movies or real life, when you have a friend or a family member that's in, maybe, you know, maybe not to the extent of this abusive relationship, right, in this movie, but you got a friend or a family that's in an abusive relationship, whether it's verbal or you're just like, man, they don't treat you well, whatever, and you know, those people will always, I don't know, for whatever reason, a lot of times will always go back for a long time before finally
realizing
it.
And that's why I feel like she finally was getting to the point where she was done with Adrian. You kind of got the idea that she was still battered, I would say is the word I'd use, in the beginning of the film where, you know, James is trying to get her to go even to the mailbox. And she's so scared for her life. She doesn't even want to take a step out of the house, you know? Mm-hmm. And when she see the dude running, who I think also was Adrian, but didn't want to say anything, I think that scared her enough to be like, I don't even want to do that. And seeing that just showed me how much, like, the extent of how much a better relationship is. And that's why, unfortunately, a lot of people would go back to that, because it's familiarity and it's the safest space that they think that they could be in.
Right.
That's the sense I'm making. But we're not going to go into a psychological therapy session here, but it was really interesting to see that. And also it was interesting to see how certain aspects of the film, specifically when Lee was not showing you the Invisible Man or Adrian, in a sense. Spoiler, it's Adrian and Tom. How he wasn't showing you them at all, but he was using different tricks to show you when they're there, when they're not there. For instance, when she was cooking breakfast in the morning and James was ready to get ready for work, the knife comes down and you see the knob on the stove just turn by itself. Like, pretty fucking good. Like, excuse the language, but it was so interesting to see that. And it was surprising because, you know, most of the CGI galores that we get, you expect to see something like that. But it didn't even look like...
No, it was like some Paranormal Activity type stuff.
Exactly.
Where pulling the sheets off and then the footsteps going on the sheets.
So beautiful. And I was so surprised that a movie... Again, I'm thinking this movie was $30 million budget, but a movie with $7 million was able to do effects... It looked that good. And when James is getting his butt beat in his own house, it looks like somebody's literally pulling him and punching him. Now, maybe that's green, like a green man doing the entire time, but it looks so damn good. And
yeah.
It looks
really or, nice. You know, taking out all of the officers at the whatever psychiatric hospital. It was pretty insane because... The whole time that's happening, he's like flickering on and off.
Yes.
So you're going between invisible and seeing like little bits and pieces of this like camera type suit. Which, by the way, what did you think of the suit?
So,
when it wasn't invisible.
So to your point, I was gonna to that question.
It's like a bunch of like selfie cameras.
Yeah. So I feel like it was like a camera cloaking device, right? Because he's a billionaire. He's groundbreaking in optics and illusions and stuff like that. So, I mean, for it to be the closest thing that we could get to an actual Invisible Man movie, unless it be like some sci-fi thing like what Carpenter did in the late 80s, this I think was really good. Do I like the suit? I'm worried about the capabilities, the breathing capabilities a little bit. But other than that, like,
wearing all of that hardware, and he's just like mowing through people.
Right, and I'm like, how can all these movie cameras magic. On there, exactly, how can all these cameras you have on your body, you're able to move so well and breathe so well? Like, I just want to know. But again, logic that I have too much for, and I should dumb it down. I really liked it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I dug it, and the fact is that its only purpose was to try to ground... the ability to be invisible in like modern reality, like technology, making it real. So, I mean, it did its purpose to suspend disbelief for the audience. Like, oh, that's how he turns invisible.
And I was going to say, the two times that I did watch it this weekend, not once someone was like, wow, that's bull, you know? And I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting. Because you could actually see somebody trying to make something like that in 2020. With the money.
Well, because, yeah, it's essentially a tons of cameras, but then in between the cracks between the cameras, it's like projector.
It's like a little projector. Velcro, yes. And
so it's like it basically takes all of the images that the cameras are doing and then projecting it out to basically look like what's around you.
Which was pretty interesting. Like any other, again, CGI galore movie that we would have seen, which I'm excited that Lee did it, you would have saw that from jump, right? You would have known, hey, this is what the Invisible Man looks like, but things like that. But, like, I feel like he was paying homage to the old monster movies because you didn't know what was going on until she went back to the house after she basically got attacked in James's apartment. And after she attacked him, Adrian attacked James's daughter. And you're like she's going to the house in the Tahoe, going to see what's going on. She sees the suit. You didn't know that that was the whole thing until that moment. And I feel like a lot of films nowadays try to show you the monster from jump and then expect you to be okay with what's going to happen throughout the end. And I love what Lee did to say, hey, I'm going to progressively show you what's going on. But then at the end, hey, this is what my monster was.
Yeah. And I mean, the monster, not just stalking her and abusing her, but then again turning people against her by making it look like she was the one that hit James's daughter, and then follow that up with, oh yeah, your sister who you told hates you actually is starting to believe you again and is agreeing to meet with you, and you just told her the whole story and she's actually believing you. And then what happened? You make it look like she cut her own sister's throat in a restaurant.
Which is
A, killed your sister, and then B, did it in front of you, and then C, made it look like you did it.
In front of public. So it was just, again, really great storytelling and really great effects to get to that point. Also, again, movie magic. I'm sorry I'm not trying to pick apart this movie, but if that restaurant had cameras, all you had to be on, like, was go see the cameras. Like, I didn't have that knife in my hand when it happened, like, you know, but I digress. But that was one of the greatest, not greatest moments, but that was one of the what the fuck kind of moments in the movie, because you're sitting there, you're watching it, and you're like, oh, she actually is believing her. You're understand. Wait, what is that in frame? And literally, you just see a knife. I'm like, no. I was like, damn. Wow. And you're sitting there. And what I love about Lee is you as an audience member is processing what just happened as Cecilia or Elizabeth Moss is also processing that. And you're like, wait, whoa, wait. Hold the hell up, you know? And it was just, it was like that moment happened, and then a few moments later, you realize that, oh, by the way, you remember you were drugged a couple of days ago? We found out in your blood test, oh, you're pregnant, by the way, for Adrian. He knew you were taking birth control, so he switched your birth control out. Now, not only are we doing that, Tom tells you either you become a murderer and I just try to help you as best I can, or you call Adrian and tell him that you're going to have the baby with him. Like, worst 12 to 13, 18 hours for somebody's life ever. And yep. Lee does a phenomenal job to just say, hey, this is what's going on, as a snowball rolling. And it was, I don't know, really great storytelling. I was really enjoying that.
Yeah. And then, to get back to get to the end, which you have her take back her life, essentially.
Yes.
After everything that's happened to her. And use his narcissism against him, because he is so sure he's got her back that he's not even worried at all.
And you don't even,
because he's that arrogant. And yeah,
that's what I was thinking. I was like, he's so arrogant to realize that he doesn't know that he doesn't have her, and for her to, you know, slit his throat, have him positioned, which again, Alfred Hitchcock kind of twist. Has the camera positioned to a point where you can only see him, right? And you have it to a point where you make him, instead of like he did his sister in the restaurant, slit her throat and then throw the knife to Cecilia. Cecilia gives Adrian the knife and let him slit his own throat. And it doesn't look like he's really struggling with himself. It just looks like he's just like, okay. And it's like, whoa, all right. Cool. And she does all the acting that you need to show her that she didn't kill him, and you go about it, because
yeah, literally walked back out, took the suit off, and then came back around and then just acted shocked.
Like, not best ending, but it was a really satisfying ending that I was like, wow, that's how you tell stories, and that's how you add twists and tie knots and everything. Because I was like, where did she get the suit? In her little spot in the closet,
so that nobody had multiple suits,
and I didn't. He had to.
He would have had to, because she stuffed that one. She
stuffed that one. You're right. Okay, she stuffed it in her spot in the closet. You're right. Okay,
and then we end with, you know, James asking her what, like, you can't keep that, and she's obviously keeping it. So, Invisible Woman
could be, and he literally, she asked him, you know, did you see it? Did you hear it? Did you hear him kill himself? And he's like, yeah, it sounded like he killed himself. And it was that for sure nod of saying, we went from you were completely scatterbrained and battered at the beginning of this film. 2.5 weeks later, you've become this completely different woman, this badass woman. And you know what? You're right. Adrian did kill himself. Great writing. I really enjoyed it. Now, back to the question that I wanted to hold off on and leave into the end. So, excuse me. How would you have felt if we got this Invisible Man, right? This is, I guess, hypothetically, we will say this is the Invisible Man we wanted in the Dark Universe because they wanted to put this in the Dark Universe. We got this. What if, and I was thinking about this the entire ride back from the hotel, the theater in Beaumont. What if we would have got the mummy we wanted, but it would have been like a Brendan Fraser's 1999 mummy, but with a less budget, and it was still action-packed with some of the horror elements that we wanted in it, like that one did, and with Dracula, instead of making it that epic that we got Dracula Untold, instead of that crazy epic we
just got. Oh, yeah, the Luke Evans.
Yes, that bard of a Dracula movie. Mm-hmm. We would have got, I don't know, like a $20 million Dracula where we see the origins.
I mean, of Dracula, you really got to go like gothic horror with a little bit of like erotic type thing. Like, I think,
like Gary Oldman's Dracula?
Yeah, like the Coppola Dracula. Right. Dracula from the 90s.
So, but then the thing is like, if you would have done that, you could have found some way to tie it all again together, then done your Dark Universe, right? Because I feel like, again, we talked about this with the Warner Brothers DCEU, and now they're repurposing and retracting their steps. I feel like with Universal, I feel like you had to do a movie like this and not do what you did with The Mummy 2 years ago. Hey, not only are we going to give you The Mummy, but we're going to start world building right in the movie at the same time as doing this movie. So get ready and go. And I felt like you kind of didn't give the movie enough room to breathe. You didn't give the movie its own identity. And if you would have done what you did with this film, with The Invisible Man, would have been happy. Now, it's going to be frustrating to see that we're going to get American Werewolf in London remake in 2021, I think.
Possibly.
We're going to get that in 2021, and then we're supposed to be getting a Frankenstein movie again, which that's TBD. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're still going to do all of these movies. Are you going to just give up on a Dark Universe? Or you're just going to say, hey, we're just making a lot of monster movies and call it a good day?
Yeah, that second option sounds like what they're doing. Like, I don't think they're going to try to interconnect them.
Which, I mean, it would have been nice to have those monster mashup movies like back in the day. Like, as much as I hate this movie now, like 2003 or 4's Van Helsing tried to do, but just better.
Yeah.
It would have been nice, but unfortunately, we are here for trial and error, and that's what we get. Trial and error, we got the best Invisible Man that has came out in a very long time. So, that was what I was going to ask you. So, you have it where in your list? Because I have it at 4 stars. I gave it 4 stars.
I gave it 4 stars.
And unfortunately, it's my number one movie. I've only seen 12 movies this year in 2020. It's my number one movie. Where do you have it?
Number one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, well, I mean, that was a great way to start.
Yeah.
This year. Next is going to be what? The Hunt. The Hunt comes out Friday the 13th.
Yeah, The Hunt.
Because I don't think anything good comes out this weekend. Oh, Onward.
Yeah, Onward comes out, and then The Way Back with Ben Affleck.
Oh.
I do want to see that one.
As
of right now, I know it's. I don't think it's showing at any of the Alamos.
No.
Bloodshot also comes out.
Vin Diesel's Bloodshot is coming out.
Yeah.
We got a lot of terrible March movies coming out.
Yep. So that's. And then after that, it'll be Quiet Place Part 2.
And then after that, will be Mulan. Oof. Mm-hmm. Okay. So. For all the podcasters listening, or the listeners, I just realized that we only have a Cinemark in Beaumont and a Regal. Cinemark is going to be doing a part one and a part two screening, double feature screening, on the 13th or the 12th, one of the two. And they're going to do it all day. And you can watch both movies, and you pay the price for the one ticket. I don't know if Alamo would do it, but it would be an awesome idea if Alamo would have done something like that. So, just if you wanted to spend the money to go watch it in RXD or CXD, whatever Cinemark calls their, like, audio-proof theater, they're doing it in that. So, I think it's going to be about $20. But if you want to, and for the audience listening, that would be something I would try.
Cool. Well, so, I guess that's it for today.
Yeah.
Where can the kids find you, Julian?
Well, the kids, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at King Julian Owens. And where can the kids find you, Johnny?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny the Wonder, and on Letterboxd for my reviews at Johnny Boy Wonder.
Well, all right, guys. Thank you for listening to this 45th episode of Matinee Talk. We'll be back in 2 weeks. I guess we're going to talk about one of the four or five movies we just mentioned. Might do a double feature. We don't know. But until then, guys, catch you guys next time. Later.